forced absence. I've been asked to have the pleasure of leading class on Wednesday night. So I've jumped at the opportunity, and we're going to change things up a little bit different from what Forrest was doing. But the format is going to be very similar in that I'd like this to be more of a class than me getting up here and lecturing. And the topic that I'd like us to take a look at is investigating Christian evidences. Now, whenever I say Christian evidences, we all have different experiences and different reasons why we believe what we believe. Specifically, why we believe in God, what brought us to the belief that God is, and that the Bible is truth, and what led us to believe that the Bible is truth and that it is divinely inspired and written by God, and it is the Word of God. Now, my experience and what led me to Christ isn't going to be the same thing that led you or made you believe. There were a certain amount of things in my life or certain things in my mind that had to kind of line up for me to believe. And it built on little things over a period of time. Now, what caused me to believe maybe will help you in your faith and strengthen your faith and strengthen your evidences for the things that you believe. And the things that brought you to Christ and the things that brought you to believe and the evidences that you see, I may not. So I believe it is a worthwhile study for us to go through. And on top of that, this is the topic that I've been studying here lately, so it was convenient for me to come up with a class for it because I've been studying it anyway. And mostly it was because of a friend of mine, a long-distance relationship. He lives out in Seattle, and we've been friends for well over 25 years. Highly, highly intelligent man, but a pretty devout atheist. And the reason I started going back over evidences is because he started asking me questions, like just out of the blue, about what Bible translation do I use? What Bible translations do I trust and why? What's the differences between those? I'm like giving them, you know, my opinion and giving him my answers on these things. And the question popped in my mind, where did this come from? Why are you asking me this? I mean, it's great. I enjoyed this dialogue that we're having. It's fantastic. But he said, well, I've studied the Bible before, and it's been quite a while, and now that I'm older and getting longer in years, I'm curious if there was anything I missed or if there was something that I didn't understand, so I want to go over it again because I don't want to be in that situation. If I do come to believe, I'm going to be Pope, okay? So he's definitely fervent in whatever he does. But he has a scientific and analytic mind that is just amazing. Some of the questions that he has asked me caused me to go back and look at the evidences that led me to Christ and led me to the conclusion that God is, and God is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. So in saying that and asking that and in introducing this idea of looking into evidences, I want to ask you, what evidences have you experienced that lead you to know that God is, real? And while you I'm going to give you a minute and go on here a little bit and introduce this outline that we're going to be utilizing over a period of Wednesdays. This is may not be the entire outline, but there's no way I can get through every single one of these bullet points tonight. There's just way too much information here in this outline that I'm going to be presenting. So one of the very first things that we want to discuss is the case for the existence of God. There is a law called the excluded middle. And that law states that an object or thing cannot both possess and not possess a certain characteristic. Case in point, if the cat is dead, it cannot be alive. If the cat is alive, it cannot be dead. So it excludes the middle. If we use the empirical statement, God exists, that automatically precludes it takes out the middle and says that God cannot exist and not exist at the same time. So we say that God is. We have to have some sort of evidence to back that. We need to be set for the defense of the gospel, set for the defense of our belief of why we say God is. So I ask you, give you a little bit of time to think about that, what led you ultimately to believe that God is rather than God is not? Anybody want to share that? Kevin.
I was raised in a home where God's existence was always taught.
Okay.
So I really grew up with no alternative way of thinking. You know, he just existed because mom and dad said he existed. And it wasn't that there was some profound scripture in the Bible, but that's the way I was taught.
Right.
And when I was a teenager, I got to that point where I knew I needed to obey the gospel, and I delayed just out of nervousness more than anything else, and then I finally did obey the gospel. But obviously, just like with anyone, as the years go by, your faith grows and it becomes founded on a variety of things. And I've talked before about how one of the things that today has the most impact on me that convinces me that there must be a God is just the creation itself.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that we're going to discuss. One of the arguments that's listed here on the outline is the cosmological argument, and that's what you're talking about. And there's different aspects of that argument that we're going to talk about. Jesse.
For me, as a historian, you know, growing in my faith, what really has been the bedrock of my faith has been the existence of Christ and the certainty that I have that Christ was who he said he was. And if Christ was who he said he was, then God is and was and always will be. And so, you know, in studying the New Testament, history books, you know, there is not a historian that I've had or a teacher of history that I had in college that would have denied the existence of the man, Christ.
Right.
And so,
right.
And to me, the existence of Christ and the evidence that points to him being who he said he was the most compelling argument that God, that the Old Testament scriptures are true.
And that is one of the evidences that I plan to discuss is that Jesus was a historical figure, an actual person that walked upon this earth, and that is irrefutable. He was here. Now, the question was he deity? Was he insane? You know, we'll discuss that more in depth. But the fact that he was a living being on this planet is irrefutable. That cannot be denied. So that is a definite evidence for the case of Christ and for the case of the Bible and of God. Myself, I think one of the first things that really kind of pushed me over, I was introduced to a line of logic. Some of you, I may have said this before, I know I've said it before, some of you may have heard it, some of you may not. but it's called Pascal's Gambit. Pascal was a philosopher and mathematician, and he came up with this Punnett square that basically states, if God is, and I believe, I'm in a win-win situation. I've won eternity. There's nothing bad about that situation. If I believe and God is, that's to the positive. If God is not, and I believe, I don't really lose anything, but I don't gain anything either. If God is not, and I don't believe, again, I don't really gain anything, and I don't lose anything. But if God is, and I don't believe, you lose everything. The price is exceedingly high to not believe. Just in logical terms. Now, that's not, like Kevin was stating, that's not where I stayed. He may have been raised in the church, and that he didn't have an alternative to that belief, but the faith obviously became your own over a period of time. And your belief became your own. It wasn't just something that was learned. There was evidences along the way that added to that initial belief or initial funneling into Christ and into God. In much the same way that whenever we become a Christian, the love we have for Christ then and there sometimes is more fear than anything, like it was for me, a fear of punishment. But it doesn't stay there. Yeah. Yeah.
Wrote the book, A Case for Christ. And he talks about his investigation, kind of like what Jesse was talking about, into the existence of Christ. And over the time of his study, he came to Christ and he became a Christian. So in this book, A Case for Christ, he tells that story, how it unfolded.
Mm-hmm.
And just within the last, I think, 2 or 3 years.
It was made into a movie. I believe it's got an R rating to it, I think. It's either R or at least a PG-13. I think it's got a rougher rating than what I anticipated it was going to be. But, yeah. But, no, it is a good movie, a very good movie, and a true story. A journalist that actually finds Christ in the effort to disprove the existence of God. And as we're going to see, even some of the most devout atheist scientists that I've been researching and reading, even though they are not going to go away from their dogmatic science because it would ruin their entire career, have to somewhat admit and have admitted in writing that there is a touch of God in some things. Stephen Hawking was one of the ones that comes to my mind that stated there has to be a touch of religion in this. And we're going to go more into some of those scientific laws, but one of those that you're kind of inferring to is the law of entropy, meaning that things go from order to disorder, or they decay over a period of time. over a period of time, they break down into their material elements. One of the other laws that we have, as far as physics is concerned, is that matter cannot be created or destroyed. Those are natural laws. And we are talking about something that is beyond nature. So it is supernatural, beyond nature, and doesn't necessarily apply to natural laws. But in saying that, Neil deGrasse Tyson, some of you may know him. He's a famous physicist, very very outspoken, very intelligent, funny guy. I love listening to him. I get a little upset listening to him sometimes, but I do enjoy listening to the man. I've learned quite a bit, and he is a proponent of God of the gaps. And what he means by that is a statement that if we say God is in something that we don't understand or cannot be proven by science or cannot be proven by scientists, then that is God. Then God is in a ever recessing, shrinking void of incompetence. Because there is a laundry list of things that we did not know scientifically, could not explain scientifically, or how the world worked, and we called that supernatural. And now, we have a complete understanding of some of those things that we called supernatural or God. I got Jesse and then Kevin. Go ahead, Jesse. Yeah.
And even, you know, today, oftentimes we see this line between science and God. But, like, somebody has drawn this line, and it's not there.
No.
You know, there is no line there. You know, some of the most prominent scientists in the past, were Christians or believed in the existence of God.
Absolutely.
Sir Isaac Newton,
yes. That is exactly the point, and the point was further restated by Stephen Hawking. He and it was talking about string theory as far as how the universe was created, and his explanation for it basically stated that the universe created itself; God is not needed. So the more that's the idea from the atheist standpoint is we haven't got to that point yet where God is not needed. The more knowledge we have, then the less God is needed. But God is all knowing, and we are not going to know it all. Go ahead, Kevin.
See more and more how sophisticated everything is.
Right.
And that confirms the thought that that needs a designer.
The more we unravel the mystery of life, we see more and more the system and organization, and it's not random. It is perfectly organized in perfect harmony with each other. And so much so that if one little thing was changed, we wouldn't be here. Absolutely. And so to your point, I'd ask the question, what is science? What is science? If science is the search for truth. And what are we doing here as Christians? Are we not searching for truth? Are we not continually trying to sharpen one another as far as the scriptures are concerned, improve one another, to grow in the grace and knowledge of Jesus Christ? We're trying to help one another through all those things. Science's goal is very like ours. True science is the search for truth. Kevin.
I would say for most of us, you know, most of us that are Christians, we're not searching for truth anymore. We may be searching for a better understanding of the truth that's before us.
True.
But we have found truth, and that's why we have the faith we have, and that's why we are Christians. And now we're constantly searching to expand that understanding of the truth that we already believe in. Does that sound reasonable?
And Christ said, seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened. And the more I read about these other scientists that are profound atheists, more and more of them have started to come to the realization that, hey, yeah, that is truth. It can't really be denied. And I hope by looking at some of these things, we will head that same direction. Ben.
One of the questions I would ask the scientists is, go ahead and use your own evidences, don't use God's. Don't use God's. Your own, use your own.
Yeah, there was there was a joke talking about the boson particles. They were saying that they were the God particle, okay? About how the boson particle was what sparked life. And they said in certain given situations and certain pressures and certain environments, we can reproduce life. And God steps in and says, okay, make it out of nothing then. We can't do that. We have all these theories. Okay, so theory. What is a theory? What is theory? We hear the theory of evolution, the Big Bang theory, string theory, inflationary theory. What is theory? Close. That's a hypothesis. It's part of the scientific process, but it's not a theory. Theory? Anybody? Jesse?
Theory is a scientific principle that has an abundance of evidence backing to it. When you talk about the theory of evolution, they're looking at ancestors of bones, ancestors of species of animals, and they're able to see adaptations through that. And so when you talk about theory in scientific terms, it's not as if it's a conversational theory like you and I. We might have a theory that there's a raccoon in the roof because we're finding all these things to do. But it's more than that. It's in the sense that there is a large amount of evidence that would suggest that this is true.
Okay. Right. There is it is something that can be observed, something that can be tested, something that can be reproduced on those tests. But a theory is not a law. And a law is not a theory. Ben.
Right, because according to theory, a 747 is not supposed to fly. According to the theory. But it does.
Right.
So, like you said, theory is not law.
Yeah, bumblebees aren't supposed to fly either, but you put a jetpack on something, it'll fly. So it's like an F4 Phantom, same principle. You put enough juice behind something, it'll fly. So a theory is something that is reproducible, that is recognizable. A law is something that is irrefutable. It is rock solid. It does not change. A theory is a living thing. It changes over a period of time as new theories come out, new information, new discoveries come out, and it evolves over a period of time. So a theory can change. Laws do not change.
For example, the theory of how life began, okay, that is strictly a theory. There's a variety of theories as to how life began, all based on some evidence, some assumptions, kind of like what Jesse was talking about, but there's a variety of them. And that's talking about life, but then you have other theories. You know, when I was in school, it was absolutely the Big Bang Theory. That was the newfound theory of how Earth began and the universe began.
And that's changed dramatically over a period of time.
There's all kinds of theories.
Yes.
And everybody says, well, this is why I believe this, and here's my evidence. But it's not a law, like you said.
Correct. And you can... eventually, most theories are going to fall short in some portion. Maybe not in whole, because there is enough evidence to back it up to enough to make it a theory. But there are some of the theories that have been presented by mankind that I would argue they're hypothesis at best. They're just a guess. And one of those theories is string theory. We'll talk about, because we're going to talk about the universe and the cosmological argument. That's the first one that we're really going to dig into. We're going to discuss the universe, the cosmos. Kevin, he brought up in a table talk this app that showed him the constellations and the heavens showing God's handiwork, Psalm 19:1. From that, we can see order. And we're going to take a look that we've got a universe. Why do we have a universe? Why is it here? The real question that was brought up by philosophers, why is there something rather than nothing? It takes energy to make something. There has to be a beginning cause. If we see an effect, we have to have an antecedent cause or a cause that made that effect happen. So we see this universe. What was the cause? What was that initial cause? And that's one of the first things that we're going to talk about as we go through this study. Go ahead and keep this outline. I'll make sure that we have outlines available to us every week, and I'm going to be adding on to this as we get into each one of these subjects. I didn't really get through the entire outline. I don't know if I got through any of it. But I'm really excited about this study. It's something that I really dig, and I hope I can interest you in some of these evidences, because it just sets my faith on fire whenever I look at some of these truths that are not just in Scripture, but in the world that I live in, that my Lord, my God, has created. It's a very exciting place to be in. So, thank you for your attention. Thank you for your participation.